Hello, welcome to the communicating predictive modeling results, the last session of the day. I'm sure everyone's looking forward to the reception hour very shortly, but we have three speakers today at this session. Marlo Lebensberger, he leads the consulting practice at Eagle Eye Analytics. Marlo and his team are responsible for working on companies to optimize financial performance through the production and implementation of predictive models into business performance management and measurement processes. Prior to joining Eagle Eye Analytics, Marlo was a senior manager with Oliver Wyman, a leading management consultancy, where he specialized in developing underwriting, distribution, operational solutions for PNC Insurance Company. In addition, Marlo's experience includes serving as a chief underwriting officer at Plymouth Rock Assurance Corporation in Boston and an actuarial consultant at Ernst & Young. He holds a bachelor in science at mathematics from Albright College and a master's in business administration from F.W. Olin Graduate School of Business at Babson College. Our second speaker is Marina Ashioto, who is a manager of the Insurance and Actual Advisory Services Practice of Ernst & Young and is based in the firm Chicago's office. Prior to joining Ernst & Young, she was employed at a consulting firm working at a variety of economic, financial, statistical models for large corporate clients in the medical, automobile, credit, tobacco, and insurance industries. She has developed credit risk models and has developed predictive models for workers' comp and medical malpractice claims. She has a bachelor in science in mathematics, statistics, economics from Iowa State University, a master of arts in statistics from University of California at Berkeley. And our third speaker is Bill Carpenter. He's currently a principal and consulting actuary at the Philadelphia office at Milliman. Bill provides the clients with a wide variety of services, including product pricing and development, loss reserving and certification, competitive rate analysis, due diligence, business plan development for existing and startup companies, evaluation of the impact of legislation, reinsurance, computational support, mergers and acquisition, strategic management consulting. His experience also encompasses development of underwriting performance and leakage measures, data warehouse development, and the development and implementation of pricing, underwriting, marketing, risk scoring systems. Prior to joining Milliman, Bill's experience in the insurance industry included a wide range of executive roles in actuarial, underwriting, marketing, financial, and administrative services areas. He is previous positions that he's held is a senior underwriting officer at Nationwide Insurance, a senior actuary for direct response insurers at Nationwide Direct and Reliance Direct, and the CFO and product officer for online insurance brokerage lowestpremium.com. He has been also a past speaker at the CAS rate making and loss reserving seminars. He is also a fellow at the Casual Actuary and a member of the American Academy of Actuaries. So no longer delay, I'll introduce Marlo.
Thanks, Dave. I think collectively we're the only thing standing between the audience and cocktail hour and the blackjack table. So I'm thinking that we should have had maybe some fewer achievements, and Bill could have had a few less jobs to get through those bios a little faster. Happy to be here today. Big group. It's definitely hit the over. We're in Vegas. We hit the over in terms of the number that we expected to be here today. But this is a fundamental issue in everything that we're talking about at this seminar, and that's communicating the results. You'll see that we've taken a slightly different approach across the board. So if you're waiting for the best graph in the world and the best way to present something, you're going to have to wait for Marina, so she'll be up next. But there's some fundamental things here, and so delighted to go through it. So I thought I would start with some basic foundation items here, thinking about the critical success factors of predictive analytics initiatives, and a tagline, back to the basics, because I've been in a lot of presentations, I've seen and heard a lot of different things, and frankly, a lot of it sounds great, but in the end, there's a lot of value that isn't being captured, and I think that's it's ultimately all of our jobs to make sure that we realize the full value of everything that we're doing. So, starting from the top, I mean, the underlying principle that we, I think, collectively monitor our performance by is a model without implementation is useless. There's no value to a model sitting on the shelf. It's built. It can do a number of different things. But if it doesn't result in action in the marketplace, it doesn't have value. It's useless. Secondly, and working somewhat backwards, to achieve that market action and to take action, along the way you have to get buy-in from end users. So that's internal users, that's your distributors, that's external. Along the way, as I'll get into, communication doesn't start when you're presenting the results. Communication needs to start all along from the outset of an initiative. And the last one is the ability to communicate the analytics result throughout the organization. So oftentimes, many of us are charged with presenting to a less technical audience, to senior management. I'm going to state the challenge in a second about that, presenting to executives. But it requires collaboration, not from just from the modeler perspective and the results perspective, but throughout the organization. And I think that the other thing that's particularly important is to view what we're doing as a business project. And so the ultimate goal is that first thing, to take action and realize business value. It's not just a pure statistical or academic exercise. So to keep that in mind along the way. So let's think about the communications challenge. When you think about, I guess the first question, who out here has presented to senior management about predictive models? All right, a great deal of people. I'm sure that you've run into challenges, and there's a whole spectrum of them. But let's think about that for a second. Think about the makeup of the audience. Typically, the audience can be a broad consumer group. They may be coming in with multiple perspectives, potentially personal agendas. They're interested in their particular angle, and that's something that needs to be navigated through from the presenter's perspective. And it shouldn't be just dictate. It shouldn't just dictate how you're presenting, but how you're going about the initiative. Oftentimes, some of the audience is less technical than you. I think it's an appropriate assumption to assume going in that you'll be more technical than your audience. So this presents a natural knowledge gap that needs to be addressed. And identifying early on whether that's large or small is very important. Additionally, users do not necessarily care to have it explained to them. Think about your experiences with senior management. They don't necessarily need to know the details of what you did, of how you did it. They're in it, oftentimes, what's in it for me? What are the key metrics that are going to drive them? What are the key levers that are going to make them happy or not? And oh, by the way, no pressure at all on this one opportunity you have to meet with these folks, because the next time that you're going to get a free hour out of this audience is 3 months from now, so you better do a good job delivering the results in this particular meeting. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but certainly the way that we at Eagle Analytics think about predictive analytics initiatives is it's not just about analytics. It's about a holistic view of business initiatives that span the project lifestyle. So communication doesn't start in number three and deliver results of analytics. Communication starts about thinking about the organization, its implicit readiness to take action, who needs to be at the table along the way, who are the key stakeholders, all the way through into the data and all the considerations and fun that we have with data, all the way through to analytics deployment and measurement. So thinking about just the process for a second, and I don't want to hijack this into a project management seminar because that's probably for a different time and place, but we think about those pieces. So organizational readiness, well, what does that mean? So oftentimes, projects fail from the outset. The business objectives are not clear. What is the problem we're trying to solve? The benefit levers that we're going to be measured by? Who are the key players that we need to be involved with? And additionally, we need to understand the flexibility and limitations. Those limitations could be on the line of business or the jurisdiction that we're modeling in. It could be a systems constraint. Finally, from an organizational readiness perspective, think about the stakeholders in the environment of the organization that you're involving. Think about what their needs are. Think about the plan, the business case, the executive sponsorship necessary, the stakeholder engagement. This is something that if you don't do early on, you don't identify who's on side and who's not, you potentially could be bound for failure. And then I don't need to spend too much time on data, but think about how much time everyone spends on data. I think that I've taken a rough, unscientific poll of people around the group at the seminar, attending the seminar, and I would say roughly, if people would like to focus their work on analytics, roughly when I ask the question, how much time do you spend on analytics, and how much time do you spend on data? Roughly, the average is 25% on analytics, 75% on data. That obviously seems to be out of place, and certainly we believe it is. But think about what that means, and that means that there's a lot of challenges that involve data, and so you need to make sure you button those up. One of them is to obtain intimate knowledge of the challenges and no surprises. When you deliver a result, you don't want to have any surprises because it'll completely undermine anything that you're going to say. There could be a data issue that comes up during your last presentation, your final presentation. It has nothing to do with what you're talking about, and you could lose complete credibility from your audience. And then the last one is approach and activities. When you're delivering, be clear on what was done and the rationale for your for the approach that you took, but keep in mind your audience and their level of appreciation for what you did, and then, quite frankly, their need to understand or their need to know exactly what you did. Again, they're most likely interested in the results. And finally, less is generally more. You don't need to speak about every rock that you looked under, but do have the details in your back pocket, because if you're asked, you want to look good and you want to have the answer. But oftentimes, the presenters get themselves into problems by trying to turn the presentation of results, that exercise, into a training exercise. And it's not the time or place for training. So I circle these not to just clutter up my slide, but these are my three strikes. So these are things that could knock you out of the box right from the start. The limitations, not knowing what the limitations are from a systems perspective, from regulatory environment, not getting stakeholder buy-in and determine who's on side, who's not, who's going to undermine your credibility from a number of angles, and then surprises. If surprises come into play, you're in a bad place. So strike one, strike two, strike three, you would be out. Let's just think about the setting up the punchline and getting to the presentation of results themselves. And this is, a lot of my presentation is principle-based, and it's something that we certainly believe in. But ensure that it's clear, concise, and relevant. So oftentimes you'll go into areas that are completely outside of the scope, and oftentimes it's for the purpose of showcasing your talents. And please remember that when you're presenting results, the focus should be on action and capturing business value, not not using it to showcase everything that you can do. Believe me, people, the audience will be more respective and appreciative to get them results that they can take into the market than thinking about all the things that you can do. Secondly, offer caveats at the outset. So if there's things that bother you about the data or the approach that you took or something that you're going to come back to, state them, be clear about them and state them from the beginning. It'll certainly help establish credibility as well as give you an out if they come in with a tough question later. But being clear about those, being open and honest up front is important. Provide an overview and outline of key guiding principles. I threw a couple of actuarial credibility, model validation. You know, some of the principles that drive the way that you've gone about your business, make sure that those come through clear. We're all governed by the same principles of analytics, and make sure that it's clear that what you've done meets those demands. Evaluate achievements versus objectives. I put in here, focus on action and results. At the outset, we talked about setting clear objectives, setting a goalpost for yourself. Well, when you come back at the end of it, when you do your evaluation, they should tie one to one. There should be things that maybe you've discovered along the way, but you should be able to go back to your objectives and evaluate your performance. And so related to that is pay particular attention to key stakeholder interests. What are they? What's going to drive them? And I've offered a few here that are particularly general, but these are the particular ones that from our experiences have risen to the top. One is measure financial impact. I mean, it's a no-brainer. What is the top and bottom line impact? Cut to the chase, what does it mean for me? Are we going to make more money? Are we going to grow our volume? What's the bottom line? Secondly, indicate impact on key dimensions. So I like to think about this one as the network of components of an organization, and the biggest one is distribution. What does it mean for my distribution? And so when you think about the table of executives that you're presenting to, it's not just the CEO potentially, it's not just the chief actuary, it's not just the CFO. There could be someone in charge of marketing, of sales effectiveness, of agency management. That's a key dimension, especially for certain distribution channels. What does it mean for them? It's an important one. Another way to present results is to perform a retro analysis. While we're trying to predict things in the future and we're trying to dictate where we're taking our performance and our path forward, look back and what would have been. So what would have happened if we would have employed these underwriting rules? What would have happened if we would have done this rating? It's imperfect, but it certainly paints a context that is valuable to your audience. See questions along the way. This provides a lens into what your audience is thinking. So just as right now, I can see in your eyes that you're thinking about the blackjack table and you're thinking about the cocktail and the dinner and the parties later. The way to get into your audience and know what they're thinking is to actually make it informal, have them ask questions along the way, engage them. The sooner you engage your audience, the better. The better you're going to be able to position yourself, the better you're going to be able to steer your presentation, and the better you're going to be able to deliver what they want. And that's ultimately going to be the evaluator of performance, delivering what they want. And always manage, it's the funnel. You start out with a lot of concepts, and you've got to manage to conclusion. At the end of it, it needs to be clear. What is the conclusion? So I'm going to speed up a little bit, but I threw in a few examples relative to what I've seen just from a graphical or vision perspective to give you an idea of what I'm talking about. So the first thing, aside from just being a shameless plug for my company and our solution, so I apologize, CES, for that. My first point is make it relative. I mean, most people have probably seen a Lyft curve, but this is an actual client output where we tell a lot of things. And so while a voiceover is necessary to tie them all together, it probably wouldn't be necessary for the people sitting around this room to figure out what is the bottom line, what are some things. So, highlighting, and I apologize for the formatting on that, what are the highlights here? What is it in terms of confidence that we have in this result? What is it telling us? What is it relative to some of the key statistics around the average, in this case, loss ratio, the lowest loss ratio segment, What does it mean in terms of the correlation, the validation that we've gone through, and what is it and what it produces? In this case, you know, correlation measures a validation of a holdout sample on a trained output. It's something approaching one. That's very good. That means that it validates particularly well. Communicate that in English to your audience. So this is just an example, and I didn't want to necessarily go into all the details, but it's a way to have a discussion around this exhibit. You can picture that. You could talk about this exhibit for probably 20 minutes at all levels, and they're all going to get it. And that's what we need to think about when you're packaging materials for your audience, is how can we engage them? How can we have them ask questions about what we've done? How can we explore where their mind wants to go, what's going to be important to them? So the second thing is, as I mentioned, link it to financial impact, top and bottom line. And so this is a bit of a crude example, a crude graph, but this was a company that was looking to, it had leverage issues. It had some capital restraints, and it wanted to optimize its return. And so what did they want to do? They wanted to shave off some business. And so the graph is a bit of a crude example to say, hey, we've done some segmentation. We've lined up all of the policies on by their underwriting gain or loss. And here's the contribution curve, if you will, the underwriting contribution curve. And as you can imagine, when you start with the best piece of business all the way on the left on one, it's going to contribute something of value, and it's going to build. At some point, you're going to get to business where it's going to trail off. And that's what that shows here. The blue line is just a little bit of a different look at that, and that's saying if we look at segments that were produced, and obviously it would be more chunky, and that's why you're going to get, you know, chunks of that. And so that's not optimal, but it's just a different way of looking at it. But the bottom line here is that it showcases in one picture what they can get out of what you're trying to tell them in terms of value optimization, underwriting performance, underwriting gain or loss. You know, where do we draw the line? The concepts are very clear, and more context would be provided than I've offered here. But the last thing I want to say is, and the others will probably get into more pretty pictures and a lot more than I have, but I think that one of the things that we need to not get away from is simple communication tools of the table, data tables. And so data tables sometimes tell the whole story. And so in this case, you know, we're lining up three different versions of the model. What they, if they kept everything on a direct basis, what would they have done? They did their own model and they retained it. ABC company, they came up with this. This is the second model. You know, how does that compare? And then relative to change, what's the bottom line? The bottom line is they're gonna make more money. And they're gonna do it writing less money. And that, what does that do? That optimizes their return on their premium. In a nutshell, that captures it. This made it into a memo of from the CEO to the board the next day. And so that's what you're looking for. What are those nuggets? I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time here, and this is actual information, but it's probably tough to see. But this is just a quick look at looking at distribution. Their question was simple: how are my distributors impacted? If I go to the previous slide and I draw the lines a certain place and I incorporate underwriting rules, what does it mean to my distribution? And so what we did is we looked at all of their agencies and carved out two things: what is their expected profitability, and what is their what's called here a decline ratio, which is of the 100% of their portfolio, what wouldn't we want? And we just sorted it. And it's just here for more for information purposes. And so they were keenly interested on this. They wanted to dive into it. They wanted to use it for a number of things. This was, in a nutshell, an Excel spreadsheet that was based on a lot more sophisticated analysis that they immediately incorporated into their business measurement and management. Again, something that's a simple delivery tool and backed by something that's simple as an Excel spreadsheet, but it goes a long way. The graph in the lower right isn't just a blue paintball that was thrown against the wall. It actually represents the relationship between, on an agency basis, a scatterplot of the decline ratio, so what portion do we not want within a book, and an expected combined ratio. And as you can imagine, there is a relationship there. And this was done for two reasons. One, we wanted to show that relationship. It should be pretty clear. And if it didn't come out, we would have been in trouble. But secondly, there were some outliers that they wanted to look into. And this was a way to quickly identify them. So back to one of my points earlier was to put things into perspective, what would have happened if we would have taken the rules and applied them historically, what would have our decline ratio been looking back? And that's the upper left column. So this is a simple graph, but it goes a long way. And this is a month-to-month production report, production graph. The red bar graphs are new business policy counts, and the blue the line graph is a new business decline ratio. And so you can see it fluctuates around as we can expect it. And there's conclusions that I'm not going to talk about today, but that can be reached by this. You can obviously, production's down. You can see that there's some global trend in terms of what's going on in the decline ratio. But this allowed us to get to some conclusions, get to some next steps, and immediately started talking about action. The lower right is a little bit of a different look. This is actually is saying, you know, that same production, new business production, let's look based on some segmentation work that we did, let's look on the quality of that business. So we performed segmentation, we quantified what we thought the profitability level was on a combined ratio basis, and so we created an index around looking at each cohort, each new piece of business, new month of business that came in, what its relative profitability was to prior months, and we made an index out of that. And so this is something that you can use, as you can imagine, to manage your business going forward. Is my business trending worse? Is my business trending better? It looks like in this case that it's actually lower production. The red bar graphs are lower, and it's creeping up in terms of quality. What that means is, something's going on in the distribution of the business that you're writing, so you better take a closer look. So again, the key is not necessarily what the output is; it's what it's saying and what you do with it. And so the goal of each of these pieces is to set it up to be clearly articulate what it is and what it represents and where how it can be used in terms of turning it into actions. So I guess drawing to a close on my side is when you're presenting the results, always have a proposed path forward. One of the things I didn't mention that I think is done particularly poorly in industry today is the separation between business and modeling or analytics. And so while business sometimes punts to analysts to go do it and the modelers to go do it, sometimes the modelers punt to the business side to figure out all the business applications, there needs to be a better integration. And so the more dialogue and exchange that happens between the two, the better. So going into that final presentation, listing out the outstanding activities, where are you going to go from here? What's the clear path forward? What are the levers available to you? What's at your disposal to enhance the model results? And you should always have a perspective on whether it's worth it or not. What are the trade-offs and some sort of prioritization? And then here's my last point, is ties to implementation. Back to the very first point, it's useless if it's not put in the marketplace and creating value for companies. A better lens in to the implementation, what can be done, is important. And I think that's, from all the modelers and analysts in the room, that's something that we need to do a better job of, is linking up with the business side and making that fully integrated. Keep in mind the path forward may change during the meeting. Be flexible. They may send you down a bit different path. It may not be somewhere you want to go. Have a perspective on that, but obviously be flexible. And lastly, proactively obtain feedback. Ask questions after it. It will only help you in the future. Along the way, you may not have gotten the level of engagement that you wanted, but circle back and meet with the people, that were in the audience one-on-one. See what they were looking for. What was missing? What was confusing? It's only going to help you personally. It's only going to help your position working with the same audience going forward. So that's all I've had, and I know that Bill's going to summarize this stuff. But we at Eagle Eye, and I know this isn't a sales pitch, but we're a big believer in the full integration of business and analytics. And so I'm happy to take this offline and talk it anyway, but I'm going to pass it over to Marina at this time. So thanks.
Hello. Let me switch the presentation over so that we can start. Okay. So as Marlo said, my part is going to focus more on the types of visuals you can show during the model building process and in the end, and also the kinds of visuals that you can show while monitoring the results of your model after the model gets implemented. So the sections are the data validation process, the hypothesis building, the actual model building, the model testing, and then after implementation, how to monitor the model results. So in the data validation process, this is a step where you have the data and you're trying to have a few first looks of the data, see if the data makes sense, what the key patterns are, if there's a lot of missing data and you need to go back and fill in the data or get more data, see if there have been any changes in the data through time because of system changes in a company or maybe new data being collected. One idea of a plot to show is this type of plot where you can look at two variables at the same time. So on the vertical axis here, you can see the number of times that a policy was renewed. And then horizontally, you can see the distribution for two individual class groups. So you can see class group one and class group two. So you can see in the plot that you can show that class group one is much larger than class group two, but at the same time, class group two tends to attract a lot more new policies, because you can see on the top in the number of times renewed, the data for class group two tends to focus on lower values of that. So there you would go back and see why that is happening, why is your company attracting a lot more business in that particular class group, and see if that makes sense in the data before starting to use it for model building. This is a plot that you can use to analyze missing data. So the yellow parts of the graph are showing wherever the data is not missing, and then the pink parts show where the data is missing. So what you're looking for here is areas where you're missing a lot of data, and especially a lot of data that you wouldn't expect to be missing. But also, you can find areas where you can impute the data. So if you look at the last two variables there, credit two and credit three, you can see that you have a few spots where when credit two is missing, credit three is not missing, and vice versa. So probably the credit variables are very correlated to each other. So you can use that kind of relationship between them to fill in the missing data and actually have more data to use for the model building. So after you're comfortable with the data you're going to use, you can go on to the hypothesis building. And this is where you're going to start looking at different predictor variables and different metrics that you're going to use in your model building phase. And this is also where you're going to look at maybe the 300, even 400 variables that you have in your disposal and decide that for whatever reason, you're only going to analyze the 100 that look to be the most promising from your data set. So this is one plot that you can start with where you can have a two-way analysis of a demographic variable with different metrics of interest. So you can see things like the pure premium and the frequency and the exposure. And what you're looking for here is to make sure that the patterns make sense. But you're also trying to see whether this variable would be a promising variable from a modeling perspective. So if you were to create a frequency model, then you would look at the frequency plot and say, okay, as my demographic variable is increasing, the frequency also seems to be increasing. If that makes sense, then this might be a potential predictor for your model. And of course, you can look at all the other plots too, depending on exactly what you're modeling. Another plot you can look at more to see whether you can exclude any variables from the analysis is a correlation web. So this gives you an opportunity to look at the correlations between a lot of variables at once. So the solid lines in this plot show positive correlations, and the thicker the line, the higher the correlation. And the dotted lines show negative correlations. And again, the thicker the line, the more negative the correlation is. So you can use this plot to see whether some variables are heavily correlated, then you don't need to look at both of them. If they're positively correlated, you can just look at one of them in the model, especially if you have a strong preference of using one versus another. So you can limit what you're testing using this method. In the model building phase, you have to really pay attention to what you are adding in the model and also how what you are adding is impacting what's already in the model. So it's an iterative process where you have to go back and forth. And as you are adding variables in the model, you need to go back and make sure that the patterns that you saw for variables already in the model are still there. So if you add, for example, a variable that's very correlated with another variable that's already in the model, it might just the first variable might just lose the strength it had in the model. It will have a much weaker pattern. And there you'll have to decide what you want to do, exclude one of the variables, or some modelers like to keep them both in. So there it'll be a matter of choice, but you would need to know why that is happening in your data. Okay, there we go. In the model building phase, partial plots are a very important tool to see exactly what the patterns are in the variables. So you can use partial plots to focus exactly on the effect of the variable that you're interested in while adjusting for all the other variables. So this is a way to isolate the impact of every variable in the model alone. So a partial plot would look like something like this, where you have your predictor variable and you can see the pattern of that variable based on rate relativity, if that's what you're modeling. And again, you're looking at the pattern of this variable while adjusting for everything else in the model. So it's not a two-way look. It's actually the way this variable looks in the model. So you can look at the variable. Its pattern is the solid line. And then the dotted lines show the uncertainty around that pattern. So you can see in this plot that as you have less and less data for that predictor variable for higher values in the histogram, the pattern becomes more and more uncertain, which makes sense. You can have another type of partial plot where you're trying to see how well the pattern is fitting the actual data. So the dots are the scatter plot of the data. And again, here, you even have to adjust the scatter plot for all the other variables that are in the model so that both the solid line and the scatter plot are adjusted for the same variables. And what you're looking for here is a tight fit of the scatter dots around the line. If you have a much wider fit where the dots are all over the place and they don't necessarily follow the pattern of the line, then you need to question the fit of that variable. And you can also use this type of plot to see whether any transformation of variables is ideal. Maybe you're fitting a line through the data, but your scatter plot is showing curvature. So there you would try to think whether you need to exponentiate or take a quadratic form or even a spline of your variable. Here are some plots that show some weak patterns in the data. So as I said before, this is a case where you have a lot of variability around the line. So you have a line, it has an upward, pretty strong pattern, but the dots are pretty wide apart around the line. It's not a tight pattern around the line. So this variable is not a very strong predictor. And in this case, the dots are very close to the line, but the pattern is very flat. So this variable doesn't have a very strong impact because when you go from the lowest values of the predictor to the highest values of the predictor, the rate relativity doesn't change that much. So you might want to not include this variable in the model because it doesn't have a very large impact. Another type of plot you can show where you can analyze how the variable performs through time is a time consistency plot. So here you're basically recreating the model for each snapshot in time. It could be year, or it could be policy period, or it could be any other time period that makes sense. And a lot of times in these plots, what you'll find is that even though your variable has a very strong pattern, maybe it has a very strong positive pattern, maybe for 1 year it has a negative pattern, so you want to go back and see what changed in your data there. Maybe there was a system change in the company. Maybe there was a different way of measuring the data after a certain point in time. But you need to make sure that the pattern is consistent through time if you're going to include it. Oftentimes, you see the change in the very last year of your data, so when you go to implement the model, you wouldn't know what to expect for the next year because you don't have the data yet. So you need to be particularly careful about this. This is another type of partial plot for a factor variable. So again, here you're just trying to see a large differentiation in the rate relativity between the two different credit levels. You don't want to see a lot of overlap between the two categories. You want them to be wide apart. The model testing phase is the most critical phase because this is where you're going to go back and refine your model if you need to refine your model, and this is where you're going to see whether your model has the desirable effect, which is, for example, to separate your accounts into good and bad, decide on making underwriting decisions based on the model. So you need to make sure that during model testing you're addressing all the issues that need to be addressed. Marlo already talked about the lift chart, so this is just another way of showing it. His was a little bit different, but the idea here is to see a large differentiation between your lowest and your largest groups and to see a scaling pattern, upward pattern, as you go from the lowest to the highest group. You don't want to see the bars going around the line too much. You just want to see something systematic like this. This is an example of cross-validation. Of course, data is expensive. You don't want to include variables if you don't have to include the variables. So here you can see the impact of including additional variables in the model on the prediction error. So you can see that in the beginning, as you include more and more variables in the model, the prediction error goes down, which is what you want to see. But as you include more and more variables in the model, this improvement flattens out. So you would want to see where it starts flattening out a lot, say around variable 18 here. You would want to exclude all the other variables, even if they are significant in your model, because overall they're not improving it that much. And of course, if you have something like credit data, which is expensive, you wouldn't want to include it at that point. The last section has to do with monitoring the model results, and I know Marlo talked about it a little bit too, but I'll go over it quickly as well. So again, you want to see some version of a lift chart or a retention chart where you can split your population in deciles based on different metrics and make business decisions based on where the accounts fall in that chart. So you can create a chart based on loss ratio, which would be like a lift chart, or retention rates, or some sort of schedule mod. Another chart you can create is to track the average score over time to see if there's any changes. Of course, when you're creating a loss ratio model, you want to see your loss ratios go down because you believe that now you can underwrite accounts better and rate them better. So you want to see the rate go down with time. And here, if you start seeing the rate going up after some point in time, of course, you want to go back and check. Maybe your model needs to be recalibrated. Maybe there's some drifting in the model. So those are some things that you would need to monitor. Another thing you would want to monitor is after you've implemented the model, you have set some business rules that need to be followed. But of course, they will not be followed 100% of the time. So you need to make sure that you are tracking all the exceptions where the rules weren't followed and go back and see how the accounts under the exceptions are performing. So if the loss ratios for those accounts are much higher, then you would want to go back and make sure that the rules are implemented, or you want to go back and see what was so special about the accounts, why the exceptions needed to be made, and how you can avoid this kind of result in the future. So in summary, you would want to capture the statistical concepts in images, and of course you need to customize these kinds of visuals to your audience, so you can't present something too technical to an audience that's not very technical. You would want to limit the number of concepts you show on every slide so that the audience is not inundated by a lot of things going on in your presentations. You need to listen to what your audience is saying and maybe in the next iteration change the way you're presenting things so that they can understand it a little bit better. And you need to present these types of results throughout the life of the project. So there's a way to create lift charts throughout the life of the project without touching your holdout sample, and that's what you should do to see how it improves as the project goes on. And of course, you want to look at those partial plots throughout the life of the project, and even look at partial plots for past variables, since something might change as you're adding more and more variables. So I'll turn it over to Bill.
Okay, so the good news is Marlo and I have similar philosophies, so there'll be a little bit of repeat, but we'll get you out of here maybe a little bit sooner for cocktails and slot machines and so on. So let me dive in here. I took the focus of looking at, you know, communicating to management as well. So I think Marie, she had some great slides on some graphical, ways to present things, and I'm going to focus, more along, like Marlo did, along on the process of communicating to management and to the stakeholders in the process. So the focus has to be on the business case and, you know, not on the details of the model. I mean, once you've got buy-in from management, and we'll talk about that process in a second, but once you have that buy-in, you've gone through explaining how the model is, why it works, and, you know, they've authorized the project, they assume you've got a handle on that, so you want to focus on the business case, on the details, and so let's talk about that. So some obstacles you may face in that process, you want to, as Marlo said, you want to avoid the training temptation. You don't want to get in and try to train senior management on this. You may have them reasonably familiar with loss reserving or rate indications if you have responsibility for that at your organization. It's going to be much more difficult on the modeling, and you should try to focus on the why it works as opposed to the how it works. So in that process, you're probably going to have some skeptics because they're going to perceive it as a black box. So again, focus on why it works and less on how it works. And again, management's going to, one of the other things you're going to have to, you may have to overcome is they're going to have their own biases about what factors drive, you know, the key results, drive profit, drive growth. And as you do the modeling, maybe some other things come out and those biases they have don't pan out. That's something I think over the course of the project you're going to have to be aware of and have to manage those expectations through the process so that it doesn't undermine you at the end. So overcoming the obstacles, again, focus on the results. This is fun stuff. So it's I do consulting. I'm in the consulting side of things. We just finished doing loss reserve appraisal. So in that case, we're helping companies make sure they don't make a mistake on the asset side of, you know, the liability side and the asset side of the balance sheet. So we're looking at the balance sheet there. So they're paying us something to help them make sure they don't make a mistake there. This is more fun. You're actually in on the income side of the statement. So you can help them figure out how to make more profit. You can, you know, whatever they're paying you, you're going to return that many more times over in terms of delivering more profit and hopefully helping them deliver more growth as well. So it's a chance where, you know, management, it's the most likely time that management will thank you for the effort because you've helped improve the bottom line. And, you know, I got hooked on this early in my career. It wasn't modeling. Okay, we do modeling now. It was more like drill down, but it was I had responsibility for pricing for a few states. It was for homeowners, and it was drilling down and helping them figure out why they had such a poor loss ratio. And you know, we were able to determine what was going on. It was a lot of wood-burning stoves and so on. And so through this process we went through and drilling down, we were able to identify that. And after we got done, I got a call. I think it was, you know, it's like the number three or number four guy at the company called, and you know, thanked me for the effort. You know, I never thanked for, you know, a 20% rate indication before, or, you know, helping improve the loss reserve position, but he took the time to call to thank because we helped him find a way to improve the bottom line of the company. So it's kind of hooked me on modeling, you know, and drilling down in the data, helping management figure out how to improve results. So you want to stick to the principles of modeling. You know, why does it work? So it's multivariate. Management may be used to thinking of things more in a univariate way. So so that's one key concept to work on, you know, this and to emphasize the statistical basis for it, where you can show the correlation, show them confidence levels that this is going to be able to be repeated in the future if we implement the results that we're going to get from the model at the end of the process. And of course, the validation process where you know, you can show once the modeling's done, you can actually run the validation data through it and show them the results from that. So to increase their confidence that you know, this process is going to have you know, a good outcome for them. It's worth the investment. So it's almost a case where the ends kind of justify the means. You know, a lot of times you emphasize the means, and when you're doing reserve studies and rate indications and talking about trends, and maybe even you can train some on reserving link ratios and so on, and that's what you, those kinds of the means or the how-to you probably want to avoid when you're talking to senior management about models. I think we've talked a lot about a lot of these things from the last slide here, but again, you know, management may have some expectations or biases. You want to know what those are kind of going in, and or at least try to understand those in the process so you can kind of overcome those. You know, a key part of communicating is just managing the expectations. So I think it's been said in each of the presentations so far, you want to communicate throughout the project. You know, your process needs to include management from the start. So you've got an approval or a kickoff process where, you know, you're getting the buy-in to go ahead with or the approval to go ahead with this modeling project. You'll have some preliminary data discussions with maybe not with senior management, but with, you know, key people in management. You'll get to a point after that where you'll want to present preliminary results. You'll get to presentation of the final results and with that an action plan, and then a key thing again that each person's talked to is monitoring results. So in terms of the kickoff or setting expectations, again, back to the business case, you want to show them segments of the business where the majority of the profit's coming from, and tell them that, you know, don't be surprised if you're going to see negative growth or declining exposures in those areas. You're going to show them segments where a majority of the loss is coming from, and don't be surprised if you're seeing growth in those areas. And again, you want to establish the problem to be solved. That's a key part of setting expectations and kickoff. So, you know, what are we trying to model here? What's the target? Is it a loss ratio? You know, that's where a lot of my slides are focused on, but you know, it could be a pure premium. It could be, you know, you've got so many programs out there that it's hard to do a loss ratio analysis. You may need to do a pure premium. Maybe you've had some modeling in place for a while. You're ready to move on to retention and conversion models. So it's important to establish what problem you're trying to solve so you're modeling the right outcome. And again, you want to emphasize that there's confidence levels that are established through the modeling process and that these results can be repeatable in the future. And of course, important thing of any project, you know, is communicating a realistic timeline. So with data cleansing, the 75% or more of the time you're going to spend on working on data, don't underestimate that and communicate a realistic timeline. And just kind of set the standard. There's, you know, it could be the surprise factor. I mean, you're going to go through the modeling. Management's going to see a lot of things where they're going to kind of nod their head and say, yeah, I knew that, you know. But there's going to be a few new insights. There's going to be combinations of factors that they didn't really understand before that really drive the business. And they're going, yeah, that makes sense once I think about it. And there's going to be a few things where it's going to kind of go against the grain of conventional thinking. So, and you need to kind of prime them for that too, because they may be resistant to it at first. And so just kind of set the stage that there may be a few of those coming up along the way, and so that you're not hitting that roadblock when you're presenting those at, later on in your project. I think hitting the multivariate versus univariate, that's important. I won't spend a lot of time on that. I think once you've got your buy-in, your kickoff on your process, a key step once you've got data to work with is to have some preliminary data discussions. So I think Marina had some good slides to talk about that. A lot of times you may be talking with underwriters or operations folks about those, so you'd be doing one-way analyses and showing them that. You'll be showing them some other of the other techniques that Marina showed you, and that's a real important step in the process, because you're building rapport then with your stakeholders, and you're getting some transfer of some of the knowledge that they have if you're sitting down with underwriters or operations management, and in the end that you're improving your knowledge level, you're going to get a better model in the end, and that building that rapport is just going to help in the buy-in at the end of the process. So I really can't underestimate the importance of this step. Then we get to sharing preliminary results. After you've done that preliminary data work, you're gonna have a preliminary model. You want to share that with management as well. And we've seen a lot of lift curves already. You see them in just about every session, probably, that has to do with predictive modeling over the today and tomorrow, because they work. They're real effective, and management. It's a great tool for management, because they really they want to focus in on the extremes, usually on the ends. What's really driving my profitable business? What's really driving my unprofitable business? And they work. And again, if we're going to show profitable growth, then lay in the growth. So in this example here, we got, you can see that, it's similar to what we told them. We actually did have, we're getting growth at the unprofitable business. We're losing a lot of business at the unprofitable end, but then there's a lot of some of the other segments, we're losing business at the profitable end, excuse me, and some of the other segments that are profitable are growing. But this is not atypical for what you'll see when you go through a modeling project, and it's important for management to understand the profit and the growth. You want to, as you're presenting the preliminary results, you're going to want to talk about the key drivers. So what are the key variables that are going into the model? In this process here, model building is an iterative process. So you're getting more information. You're kind of having a dialogue in this step as well, as like you were when you were kind of sharing the preliminary data with them. So they're going to see some things here where you're showing them something and maybe it doesn't make sense. And they're going to, you can have some discussion about it and see if you need to dig into your data more make other changes to your model. In the end, this is another important step in the process to getting a good final model. And again, it's a chance to emphasize that these results, the process you're going through, that that there's consistency of the results, so you can show data year over year with your modeling data. You could take separate samples of your testing data as well and show that there's consistency in the results as from one set to the other. When you get to the final model, you know, it's a similar process as sharing the preliminary results. You're showing the lift curve. You're talking about the key drivers. Hopefully, you know, at that point, there's not too many surprises from your preliminary discussions. And, you know, again, a lift curve here just showing test data versus validation data and just kind of reinforcing that, you know, the goodness of the fit of the model. So that gives management confidence that when they, you know, as they react to this and put in a plan to implement, you know, the scoring or other actions that they're going to do to address this, that it's going to have the intended result in the future. And I think the final step is you need to have a monitoring plan after. You want to go from the final results to a good monitoring plan. You want to be you want to have several monitoring tools in place. So I mean, some examples you would look at the mix of business by segment or decile. You'll want to look at actual versus modeled results in the future, and you'll want to look at growth as well. So how does the mix of new business change? How does my retention rate change? And you know, are the rate actions by segment lining up with what I'm expecting? You know, here's an emphasis on lapse rates here. So we're looking after implementation. We've broken it down by decile here, and presumably you're taking the most aggressive actions at you know, the higher deciles here, and would expect to see higher lapse rates. And you're trying to keep more of your profitable business there on the left, and hopefully seeing lower lapse rates over there. So similar, I think, slide to what Marina showed. And you can build similar kinds of monitoring tools for a mix of new business, loss ratio, rate action as well. And finally, if you were, this is kind of taking a different direction, but looking at if you were modeling new business and new business growth, that's the flip side of it. And once you've kind of taking it maybe to the next level, you've got a loss ratio or pure premium model in place, and you want to look, okay, I want to emphasize the growth, and just looking at you know, what on this one here, it's savings versus current premium, and just looking at a distribution of quotes. This company actually asked, it was a direct writer, and asked their customers what they were paying right now, and compared that to what they were quoting them, and so they could actually get a comparison of their competitive position. And then just looking, okay, based on that, you know, how much I'm saving that customer, what are my closing or conversion rates? And so how can I, you know, looking at this through my model, I've made some changes, that savings profile is going to change, and then I can make some predictions about what's going to happen to my overall conversion rate. And of course, if you're going in depth and looking at a conversion model, that blue line, that closing rate could change as well, and it does for different segments of business. So being aware of that would be important in forecasting growth rates for the future. So just to summarize, again, focus on the business case. You want to stick to the principles of modeling, not the details. So in other words, you want to stick to the why it works and not necessarily how it works when you're talking to management. You need to proactively manage expectations. You want to avoid, if you're going to avoid surprises at the end of the project, and you know, laid out all the places where you need to communicate throughout the life of the project to you know, maximize the opportunity for a successful project at the end of the process. So I'll turn it back over to Dave.
Well, about 20 minutes of time left. Any questions for any of the panelists at all? Any other questions?
I have lots of experience with it, and I think it's an inevitable challenge that we face. And again, the only thing that one of the key things that we do is engage along the way. And so I think that the biggest thing that approach that we've taken is to engage early. We like to work when working with clients, and I think that you can do this whether you're an internal model or an external, is go around and do a lot of hypothesis building with the various departments. So whether it's marketing, whether it's underwriting, whether it's actuarial, whatever it is see who's a believer or not. Who are the people that are going to be challenged? Who are you going to be up against? And how insurmountable is it? I think it's all about welcoming, being transparent about the process, and welcoming people to the process along the way. It's a challenge. I think that it's I'll leave it at that. It's a challenge. I don't know if that was an answered question or not.
More presentations, Well, it's, I think the most rigid things are on the reserving requirements, but I mean, there's, I mean, it's, I don't know if I've given it as the fullest thought that we need to on that as well, but. I probably need to think for a second. I don't know if you have anything to add.
I think that, I mean, predictive analytics is real in the world in every industry. And so to the extent that the insurance industry happens to be governed over by actuarial principles, I don't know exactly the answer to your question, but it needs to be flexible enough to be open to meet those demands. And so. I don't know how you govern it, quite frankly, but you know, abiding by the principles established in analytics, but also quite frankly putting some responsibility on the consumer as well, to the companies themselves. You know, every other industry doesn't have a patrol cop to do that. So yeah, that's a really tough question, actually.
I mean, in the end, it's, are the rates, you know, inadequate? Are they, you know, you're not doing anything to make the rates inadequate? Are you making them unfairly discriminatory? I think, you know, you're making them as fairly discriminatory as you can. It's not unfairly discriminatory. You know, it's following the data. So in your pricing, and it's just kind of taking it to another step. So I think what we're doing is meeting, you know, the standards laid out there.
And I think one point I think that's worthy of mention is that, you know, when you think about the governance or principles of reserving, where you're setting a reserve and making assumptions about the future, but you're setting a reserve on things that have happened versus making decisions or making recommendations on things that are in the future and are in a lot of ways influenced by a dynamic marketplace and something that's moving. So the standards cannot be as rigid as they are maybe on other disciplines within the actual oil community. I'm just going to issue a blanket statement. These are my opinions, personal opinions.
Okay.
Well, I think there may be, you have to, certain things you have to meet for a report versus what you're, you know, like my focus was communicating to, you know, you're up in front of management and you're presenting your results. So, you may have to think about it when you're documenting it, you know, your work papers and or a report may, you know, there's different requirements where you do have to get into the details of what you've done versus, you know, kind of flying it at, you know, 20,000 foot level, like I was, you know, more suggesting, maybe not 20,000 feet, but a higher level for when you're talking to management about this.
Any other questions? All the three presentations, they will be uploaded on the CAS website next week or, you know, towards the end of this week. I want to thank Marlo, Marina, and Bill for taking their time out. This concludes the session. Thanks.
Nice work, guys.
I'll upload it. I got like a couple things I need to fix on my slides. So.
When I said that you can do it throughout the project, you mean?
I didn't know if that's what you're planning to do or not, so I was just going to say I'll upload it.
Well, with the holdout sample, you have your model, and then you can just apply that model to the holdout sample and then see what predictions you can get and create the lift chart. If you wanted to do it throughout the project, then you split your... Yeah.